Continuing a mitzvah, Tav Chaf Aleph, 421, the mitzvah of tefillin of the arm. And we were listing the things that are requirements in the tefillin, halacha la Moshe Mi-Sinai. These are traditions that date back all the way to Moshe Rabbeinu. And if these criteria are not fulfilled in the tefillin, then the tefillin are pasul. So we're on Gimel, v'sheyichroch haparshiyus b'matlis. That one of the requirements is that when one inserts the scrolls into the boxes, you don't just insert it naked, you wrap it with something. So matlis really is a little piece of cloth or something that you wrap the parshiyos with. However, the minhag nowadays is that we don't use a cloth. It's already mentioned the Shimush Rabba that there are different options. You could use a matlis or another cloth. So the minhag nowadays is that it doesn't have to be a cloth. We use a blank piece of cloth, maybe a lower quality cloth or something, scraps, a scrap cloth, and we use that to protect the parshiyos. So again, you don't want them to get abraded as they go in and out, if you're putting them in or taking them out or checking whatever into the boxes. So therefore, you have something to protect them by wrapping it around. B'sheyichroch osan b'se'ar shel behema ochaya tahora al hamatlis v'achar kach machnisan b'vatein shel or. And you don't just wrap it with the cloth or little piece of scrap cloth, but you have to, in addition, on top of that, you tie it all shut with a hair.
A hair
of a kosher animal. So it's interesting that there are two different shittas about where you put the hair. So one shita is that you put the hair first and then you put the matlis. And the other shita, the way the Sefer Chinuch presents it, which is probably the majority shita, is you put the matlis, which makes more sense intuitively, that you put the matlis
before you have the wrapping.
You wrap the scroll straight with a hair. You tie it shut.
Protect it.
And then you put the wrapper. Right, so that's why I agree with you, that intuitively you think that it makes more sense to wrap it with the matlis first and then the hair, but the Arshita is you put the hair first and then the matlis. So the Maisa, the Minak nowadays is that we do both. That you take the Parsha and you wrap it with the hair, then you put a matlis, and then you put another hair on the outside. No. It has to be a kosher animal. People are not kosher. You're not allowed to eat. People. It cannot be a person's hair, although not on the same level as Behemah Tmeya. That we know that the way the Rambam presents it, at least, maybe other Shitas understand it slightly differently, but the way the Rambam presents it, the prohibition to eat people is an Isser Asay. That it's not a lav. In other words, if you eat a person, you don't get malchus. You don't get the penalty of malchus, but rather you've violated a positive commandment, because the Chumash says, Zos ha behema asher tochelu. You're supposed to eat animals, not supposed to eat people. And if you eat a person, so you're mevatel the mitzvah saseh, that the Torah says that you must eat only animals. But you don't get the prohibition of malchus. That's why we have the famous... So blood is, technically speaking, so we're talking about when the Isser Asay that the Rambam talks about is talking about flesh. Blood is not Asser. The only thing is Maris Ayin. You're not allowed to eat anything that looks like blood because it is blood.
Somebody's looking.
In other words, no. Maris Ayin applies even if other people are not looking. So you have also this issue with fish blood. So fish blood is not usser. It's only animal blood that's usser, meaning either behema or birds. That blood is usser. That's why you don't have to salt fish before you eat them. You don't have to do malicha on fish. You could take the fish, yank it out of the water, and start munching. Might have to die first, okay? But you can start munching right away. You don't have to do malicha. We can have sushi. You can have animal sushi also. You can have steak tartare. You also don't have to do malicha, technically. It's only for cooking, whatever. But if you have steak tartare, you don't technically have to do malicha, because malicha is only before you cook it. But so that's the story with the blood. So blood, if you have blood coming out from your gums, for example, and you're eating a piece of bread, and the blood is absorbed into the piece of bread, and now you have a piece of bread with human blood on it. So according to the straight halacha, that the theoretical halacha, this should not be usur, because there's no prohibition of eating human blood, but nevertheless, there's a prohibition of maris ayin, that it looks like you're eating animal blood, so therefore you're not allowed to eat it, so you have to take off the blood, you have to pick it off the piece of bread, and then you may continue eating the bread. But if it stays in your mouth the whole time, and never went out of your mouth, then you're allowed to swallow the blood, because there's no maris ayin. That's why when you have eggs nowadays, so you have blood spots in the eggs. So the technical halacha is that the blood spots in eggs are only problematic when they result from fertilization of the egg, because now it's no longer an egg, now it's a chick. So it needs shechita. But you can't check the egg.
How do we know that?
So most eggs nowadays are purchased from farms where the male roosters are kept completely separate from the hens, so there's no chance that the egg is fertilized. So therefore, any blood that you find in your egg is just some sort of fluke. And there still is sometimes blood in eggs, so it's some sort of fluke. But nevertheless, the blood is not technically asur, it's only asur because of maris ayin. So that's why, if you're still lechatchila, again, if you're making a lot of eggs, you should check them to make sure there's no blood because of maris ayin. But let's say, even if you know for sure that some of the eggs have blood, you were mixing all your eggs into a bowl. So one of the eggs has blood. So you only have to remove the blood. You don't have to remove the whole egg. In the olden days, when you were checking eggs and you found blood in an egg, you have to get rid of the whole egg because the egg wasn't kosher. But nowadays, you only have to get rid of the blood. And if you're checking a lot of eggs in a bowl and there's one with blood and you're about to get a syringe or something to take out the blood, and by the time you've gone to get the syringe, someone else in your household came and scrambled all the eggs. So nowadays that's mutter, because the only problem is maris ayin. If the blood is not recognizable, then it's not a problem of maris ayin.
What if people took the shishim?
You don't even need shishim, it just has to be unrecognizable. That's there.
Talking about
the egg.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. If the egg were fertilized, then it were really usher, then it would be about the bushishim. Yeah.
Just side comment.
Yeah.
There's Maris Ayin, our friend Maris Ayin, and then there's his evil twin Dan Nachaskus.
Okay, but the dinim of Maris Ayin are technical halachas.
Right.
There's specific things that Chazal enumerated that are usher because of Maris Ayin. There's a more general prohibition called Viyisem Nikiyem Me Hashem Umi Yisrael. That you're not supposed to do things that look as if you're doing an Aveira, even if they don't fall into the technical parameters of Maris Ayin.
No, it's just science.
So the mice, so we have these two shitas about which comes first, the hair or the matlis, the wrapper. So in Shulchan Aruch, again, the minag is quoted that you do both. You do a hair and then a matlis and then a hair again afterward, in order to be yotze both shitas. So the Vilna Gaon there in the Be'er Agra has a very interesting comment. He sort of says, I'm paraphrasing here, but Vilna Gaon says, you know, that's cute, but really the reason that it's that some people say you put the seir first and some people say you put the matlis first is because it doesn't matter which you put first. That make radin your yotze if you do either one, and okay, you want to be cute, you do both the seir and then the matlis and a seir, it doesn't hurt, but technically speaking, your yotze if you do either one. Vishayutofrin osan begidin, that when you sew the tefillin shut, they have to be sewn with sinews. What you do is you make thread out of sinew. You take tendons from the leg of an animal and you pound it so that you get fibers out of it, and then you spin it into a thread, and that's what you use to sew the tefillin together. That's what you use to sew Sifrei Torah together.
Where do you sew it together?
I was going to say, let's have living demonstrations here for those of us who don't put on.
Good idea. Okay. So that's the same thing you use to sew a Sefer Torah together and a Megillah. And if a Megillah is a little bit more lenient, but there is. But for Sefer Torah and Tefillin, you certainly have to use Gidim, which. And if you use any other type of thread, that is Puzzle. Here. Right, no fishing line. So here you have tefillin. And in tefillin, you see this crack here? I'll explain about the crack in a minute. So you have a crack here. You open it here. Here there's a hinge. Mm-hmm. So you open the tefillin here, and you stick in the parshas, then you close it together, and then you sew it. You see there are holes here? These are holes that's made for sewing. You take a needle.
Have to sew it?
Otherwise, it doesn't stay shut.
Uh-huh.
How could it stay shut? It's
a hinge.
It's a hinge, right. Here's there's a hinge, and then you you put it together, and then you sew it. So this all this white stuff here is gidim. It's animal sinews. It's not regular thread. So we have an interesting thing that Harry Everton.
Yeah.
That you see here that there's a crack in between the two parts of the what's called here the titura, which is like the base part of the tefillin. So it's become a style nowadays. So I don't know if your tefillin will be will do what I need for my demonstration, but it's become a style nowadays that people don't like to see this crack. That they feel it looks better. You also have a crack.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Good for you. I'm about to explain why the crack is better. So people don't like to see this crack, so they do something called a sgira, which is that you put glue here so that it is mamish glued shut, and then you paint it over with paint so that it looks like there's no crack here. So this...
But how do you know there's something inside?
Good question. So the to me, this is that's the most ridiculous thing. That tefillin for thousands of years, they all have this crack. It's two parts that are sewn together. That's the way they're supposed to be.
Yeah,
but people have this idea that you can't see a crack. And that also creates shilas, because the Chazon Ish writes that when we say that you have to sew the tefillin together with gidim, it means that the tefillin have to be held together with gidim. It doesn't just mean that you go like this and you're yotze. So the Chazon Ish holds that if there would be glue in here that would be enough to hold the tefillin together, then the tefillin would be puzzle.
Puzzle.
So the Mishnah Brura holds that if you sew the tefillin first and then you just put in a little bit of glue, it's not a problem. So that's what people, most people rely on, that they mamish glue and sew up the tefillin over here. But it's really unnecessary.
Open by itself if it weren't sewn or glued?
You could just go like this, you know, like not doing it, but this could just go open, shut, open, shut, open, shut, open, shut.
And what if you have to chew with gloves?
So you take out the stitches and then you re-sew it afterwards.
They do it just to make it look nicer.
That's just to make it look nicer. It's become this new thing that people have this idea that it looks nicer. You actually, it's funny because as a sofer, one of the most common questions that I get for people come to me totally distraught. They have to show me their tefillin because there's something wrong with them. Look, look. What? What's wrong? So, you see this? There's a crack here all over. That's what it is. It's two parts that are sewn together. Oh. That's the most common question that I get about tefillin is that people are worried about this crack. But I personally encourage people when they buy tefillin. A lot of people don't want it because they don't think it looks good. But I encourage people just to get it sewn up. And not that, again, you can rely on the Mishnah Berurah. But there are halachic advantages, and it's just unnecessary. Okay, people do what they want. But that's the story with the crack, that you have to sew it with gidim. B'sheosin lahen ma'abores me'or hachipoi shetikonish ba'aretzua ad she'te'overes ve'leches besoch teva shela. So they basically, you leave this part, when you fold it over, again, originally it's one flat piece of leather that you construct into these boxes, and then you have to take part of it and you fold it over to form the covering over here. So when you fold it over to form the covering, you have to leave a little extra here on the end, because there has to be a place for the strap to work, to be able to go in and back and forth, etc. Okay. Vishya ritzuos shchoros. That the straps should be black. That's Halacha LeMoshe miSinai. So what about the boxes? Do they have to be black also?
I hope not.
The cover. No, I mean, you mean the tefillin themselves.
Yeah, these.
Oh.
Yeah. These parts, they have to be.
Supposed to be, right?
Oh, so everybody agrees mitzvah min hamuvchar, that it's better, it's the most ideal and aesthetically pleasing. Our historian, maybe, I don't know if she agrees with this, but halachically speaking, it's considered to be most aesthetic when the boxes are painted black as well. However, according to most shitas, there are some exceptions. The Mordechai, the Vilna Gaon, Paskins like this as well. But according to according to Moshitas, the boxes being black is not Alocha Moshmi Sinai, and if they're not black, it's still kosher. But again, we tried, in addition to the fact that everybody agrees it's better.
I've never seen them any other color.
Right. That's because everybody agrees it's better that way, and some people hold and they must be that way, so that's why the universal practice nowadays is that you make the boxes black as well, but the outer part of the Ritzua must be black, halacha Moshe Misinai, that everyone agrees. So what about...
It's yours, the inside.
The inside. So this is a new thing. I don't actually love it so much, but I'll explain why I have it in a second. So the Rambam writes that even though it's the outer part of the strap that really has to be black, it looks better if the inside matches the boxes. So since we have the boxes being black, so and that's the best for the black for the boxes. So the Rambam says that the best is if you make the ritzua completely black on both sides. So this was not the minhag for hundreds and hundreds of years. The Shulchan Aruch does not pasken like this. So everybody classically had ritzuas that were black only on the outer part. In the last couple decades, it's become more common to do it that it's black on both sides. But it's not just black on both sides. They actually, when they're making the ritzua, they take the skin of the cow. It looks like a big circle before you cut it into ritzuas. And you actually immerse it in a vat of black dye. Oh. So that the whole thing is black through and through. That's how they do it. And then they paint it shiny on the the outer side. So in addition to complying with the opinion of the Rambam, some hold, I think the Arisa said like that also, it also has the practical advantage that the Ritzua now becomes maintenance-free. It stays black all the time. So you have a problem that if the Ritzua, the outer paint would somehow get cracked or chipped, so it wouldn't be totally black anymore. So the truth is not everybody holds that's a problem, that every single spot on the Ritzua has to be black. But in order to get this idea that every single spot in the ritzua has to be black and you don't need to maintain it by touching up the paint, so it's always going to be black because it's soaked through a black dye, so that's why these have become more popular. But I'm somewhat skeptical of it because we don't necessarily accept this idea that every single spot has to be black. And the tradition, again, when it comes to new things. So I hear the argument to do new things when we have a new technology nowadays that wasn't possible in the olden days. But to soak something in black dye was something they could always do. So they could have done it, and they didn't do it. So you see, the tradition is dafka not to do that. Again, everybody agrees the ritzua is kosher. Either way, it's not a shayla of kosher, but I am somewhat skeptical of the all-black ritzua. So some people read the Mishnah Berurah as saying that even if one tiny spot on the ritzua is not black, that's no longer called the black ritzua. So that's why everybody is very adamant about having these little pens here. And they touch up the color on the ritzua. Yeah, you can do it yourselves. You touch up the color on the bottom and the ritzuas when necessary. However, it's very, 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 very... Yeah, it's a film marker.
Is that a regular marker, or is that...
No, could use a regular marker in theory. Most people use the Jewish markers because it has a hashgacha that there's no non-kosher ingredients in the marker. So according to some shita, so it's a problem if some of the ink would contain non-kosher ingredients. That's why most people, when you're touching up tefillin, they use a marker.
You don't have to do
with
shame, mitzvah,
it is lishma. It is lishma. You're supposed to say l'shem kedushas tefillin. That you're specifically coloring it l'shem, and for the sake of the holiness of the tefillin, because the painting is supposed to be done lishma, because it's one of the halachas that is intrinsic to a tefillin, at least especially when you're doing the ritzuas. But the truth is, even if you forget to say l'shem kedushas tefillin, it's still kosher because it's obvious that that's why you're doing it. It's called stama lishma, that you have a tefillin here, there's no other reason you could possibly be painting it. So therefore, b'dieved, if you forgot to say it, so that was still certainly be kosher.
You were focused enough to do it.
Right, and again, it is a somewhat questionable assumption. Maybe the Mishnah Berurah didn't even really mean it. The simple understanding is that if you take a look at the ritzua and it's black, even if you look closely, and there might be some spots that are not black. So the simple understanding is that it would still be kosher, still be called a black ritzua. That's the Ritzuas. Vishia Ches, the last one on his list. Vishia Kesher Shalahen Yodua Bitsuras Dalid. That the knot of the head tefillin should be in the shape of a Dalid. So what's going on over there? So there are two main minhagim nowadays in how you make. Can I?
Double dalid.
So the two main minhagim of how you make the kesher of the tefillin shel rosh. So one, Harry's going to show us in a second if his tefillin again are good examples. Last time they weren't good examples. So maybe.
Shel rosh.
Oh. Good. Okay. Now he's told to have a good example. So we have two different knots. One that looks like this. Huh. See everyone. What letter does this look like?
A dalet.
I don't know. Maybe it looks like a yud. Does it look like
a yud?
Look like a yud to you or resh? I don't know. Yeah. Dalet. Everybody insists it looks like a dalet.
Yeah, it's plain.
Okay. And you have another one that looks like this, which looks like a square. So what's the pshat? The Sefer Chinuch says that the Kesher is supposed to look like a dalet, so how could it look like a square? This is a major problem, and in fact, it's gone to the extent that many poskim say that if you have this one, the one that looks like a square, you're supposed to switch to this one, because it must be a mistake that the square is an error. Famously, Rav Soloveitchik used to tell people that. He used to say, you should always follow your father's minag, except in two instances. If you don't eat in the sukkah on Shemini Atzeres, you have to eat in the sukkah on Shemini Atzeres. And he said that if you have the square knot of the Shel Rosh, then you should switch to this Dalid-looking kesher. So Rav Yashiv also apparently used to tell people that. They should switch from the square to the Dalid. And he apparently used to have a signature line that people would come into him to put on tefillin on their son before his bar mitzvah. And so Rav Yashiv used to see that people would have the square. So Rav Yashiv used to ask people, don't you know how to make a knot? It says it's supposed to look like a dalid. So he used to tell them to switch to this. So finally, one person got fed up with it. So he said, so he knew that Rav Yashiv always asked the question. So Rav Yashiv, he went into Rav Yashiv to put on tefillin for sons bar mitzvah. Rav Yashiv said, don't you know how to make a kesher? So the person responded, Rebbe, the truth is, I didn't know how to make a kesher. So I looked in the Beis Yosef, I followed the instructions that he gave, and it came out like this, the square. So that's one of the big mysteries of tefillin, is that even though it says that the kesher is supposed to look like a dalid, there are many sets of instructions in the Rishonim, step-by-step instructions on how to make the kesher, and in every single one, it comes out like this, the square. So how is a square a dalid? So some people say, well, I don't know. There's one here or something in the three.
Double dalid.
That's a new thing. Nobody really mentions that. And others say that it's the straps look like a dalid. That it goes like this. You see, that one goes like this. One goes like this. Rashi seems to sound like that's the pshat in the dalid. So yeah, it is still somewhat of a mystery. But lemaisa, we know that the square is actually what all of Klal Yisrael was doing for a very, very long time. So
the instructions doesn't have the final picture of what it's...
They don't draw a picture, no. No, it just says, put this ritzua, make a loop with this ritzua, and put it in here, and put it... They present it in different ways. Oh, and also, one of the slam dunk rye is also that the original knot was really the square, is that it says that there is a cross on the back.
A what?
A cross.
What?
So what's, so mine doesn't have a cross. Okay, so the reason that it doesn't have a cross is that the Ashkenazi poskim said at one part of the process, of the steps when you're making the knot, you're supposed to put the strap through twice. Instead of the original instruction, it would say you're supposed to put the strap through once so that it shouldn't look like a cross anymore, and that's why it looks like this. But if you would imagine... Again, one of these being missing, so you have one ritzua going like that, and then instead of these two, so you only have one going in the other direction, and then it looks like a cross. So people didn't like the idea, couldn't stomach the idea of their tefillin having a cross in it, so that's why they ever so slightly changed the form of the knot so that there shouldn't be a cross in the back. Teimanim, by the way, Still have the knot with a cross in the back because they didn't live amongst Christians. What's a cross? They're not a cross. Who cares?
Cross,
that's why. It's just a plus sign, really. It's not
a plus sign. Is not a cross.
It was too close for comfort in tefillin that it should be.
A cross.
Yeah. Okay. Beseder. But Lemaisa, that's the story. So I strongly do not recommend, if anybody is considering, because they heard Rav Soloveitchik said to switch or whatever. Rav Alyosha stopped telling people to switch after somebody showed him.
That?
Yeah.
Oh,
he said that Rav Alyosha paskind afterwards, after somebody showed him that the instructions come out square. After that, he used to dafka tell people not to switch. So if you're minag, again, it doesn't have to do with minag. It's a lach lemosh mizinei, but whatever. So if it said
somebody
if you're...
said put on one of each. Oh, God.
So the correct way is the square, you say?
Not me. It's what it says in the Rishonim. That's what people are doing for a long time. And the Dalit one, this one, seems to be a very recent innovation. If you look at the history of somebody who has an unpublished whole book on this, and there is a published book actually also. I'm sorry. So there is a published book by someone else that I don't know personally, called Pre Eliezer, where he tries to go through the whole history. Again, it still is somewhat difficult that they're just calling it a Dalit and happily, and nobody comments on exactly why. I mean, some people do, a few people do, but it's not, most Rishonim just happily say a Dalit, and then it doesn't really look like a Dalit, but okay, it's one of the mysteries. But in my halachic MO is that if you know that that's what everyone was doing for thousands of years, so the problem is with you to understand why, as opposed to let's change it and in order to reflect our what we think it might, maybe should be. But definitely, if you currently have a square and you're family minag in recent generations was a square, I would absolutely discourage one from following Rav Soloveitchik's advice to switch to a so-called dalit knot. Umasha Amru, again, if you're yotze with a dalit, probably. Umasha Amru, she'ain osin hatfilin uritzuosein el Yisrael, that it must be a Jew who not only writes the Parshias, but makes the boxes of the tefillin and that makes the straps has to be Jewish. The orech haratzua shel yad, the length of the tefillin shel yad, is kedei shetakifa zroa b'makom hanachasan. They should go around the arm at the place that they're supposed to be put on. The yikshor mimenu hakesher hayadua, Shetzorech liyod betzuras yud, kitzuras yud. That and the head we have looks like a dalid, and then in the hand we have it looks like a yud. So it's shin and dalid and yud. So it's one of the names of God. So we have a shin here on the side of the bias, and then we have a dalid here in the knot, and then here in the shel yad we have a yud. So there are different opinions about what exactly is the yud in the shel yad. So according to some, it's this little piece that sticks out over here. That looks like a yud. It's a little piece that looks like a yud. Others hold the yud is actually this, the part where if you ignore the piece sticking out now, where the piece goes through, that this is the foot of the yud and this is the body of the yud. You see? You don't see a yud? Looks like that. Here's the left side.
My vision is
not.
Yud? No. Yud. Well, it looks like a yud. Okay.
It's an unusual shape. No.
This?
Yeah.
What, this?
It's like...
hard. I wanted it small. Because the shell, we'll talk about it later, but tefillin are too big nowadays, so I wanted it to be a little smaller. Anyway, okay, so this is the... too big to fit properly. Anyway, so this is a shel yad, and you're supposed to. So in other words, you wrap it around your arm like this, and then you make the kesher kitzuras yud that it looks like a yud, and then v'timtach ad ha'etzba ha'emtzois v'yichroch v'menu al etzbo shalosh krichos v'yikshor, and then you go like this. And you wrap it around your middle finger three times, and then you tie it in order to keep it in place. So that's the minimum shear of length, essentially. In other words, so you don't... all the things that you wrap around your arm, that most people wrap the tefillin around their arm several times, usually seven times is the minhag nowadays. So that is all not halachically required. That's just because it doesn't stay well, I guess, if you just wrap it here and then you have the ritzua extending to here and then you have nothing holding it in the middle. So that's why we have the practice that we wrap it several times around around the arm. But again, that's not halachically required. If your ritzua is very short and you only have enough material to wrap it around your arm three times, then you definitely yotze tefillin until you get a new ritzua that will be long enough to do to wrap as many times as you want. The maisa aruka yoser mizek shera, if it's longer than this, it's good. Wait. So we didn't talk about how long the shalrosh is supposed to be. That it's supposed to be at least to chest length. That the ritzua is supposed to go down at least to chest length, and lechatchila longer. The right one is supposed to be. There are two different shittas. That one is that the right side is supposed to go to the level of the bris milah, and the left side is supposed to go to the level of the navel. And others hold that the right side is supposed to go to the navel, and the left side is supposed to go to the chest. So most, if they're longer, it's okay too. But that's the chatchila. It's supposed to be that long. But if it's a little shorter than those ideal measurements, then that is okay. You see, a lot of people sometimes have the tefillin shalrosh straps down to their knees. That's not required. They could be cut. Bye. Where do you tie the tefillin shel yad? Al ha-kiboris.
On her what?
Kiboris. You might know it better as the bicep. Kiboris means bicep. The muscle. V'hu ha-basar ha-tafuach sh'marpeik sh'bein perek ha-kosi v'perek ha-zeroa. That it's the puffy flesh, which we call now a muscle. That it's around the elbow between the arm and the shoulder. Shenimsa kishihu madbig marpeko litzalov. When you put your arm, your elbow against your ribs, you have tefillin shochvin kineged libo. They'll be by your heart. Shenimsa mekayim vayu advar ma'ele al levavecha. These words shall be on your heart. They're not literally on your heart, but they're close to your heart. So we have this something that it says in Shulchan Aruch that drives people absolutely crazy, which is based on the smack. And the smack says that you don't have the entire bicep to put your tefillin. You only have the part of the bicep that's on, that's, basically you do like this. You take the bone from your shoulder to your elbow, you divide that in half. And you only have from here down to put on the tefillin. They have to be on the part of the bicep. Again, they can't be like here by the elbow because that's not the bicep anymore. They have to be on the bicep, but only the part of the bicep that sits on the lower part of the arm. So you have like a little bit more than half of the bicep. So people say, first of all, where did this come from? Yeah. On all the Rishonim, it just says bicep. What do you mean? Why all of a sudden the smack, one of the Rishonim, comes up with this idea that it has to be on the lower part of the bicep, but nevertheless, the Shulchan Aruch paskins like that. So that's why people make themselves crazy that the tefillin, especially with how big they are nowadays, they have to sit on this tiny part of the bicep. You make yourselves absolutely nuts, which is why many of the Achronim, the Aruch HaShulchan, says he doesn't know where this comes from. The Vilna Gaon also says this is wrong. You say you have the whole bicep. So for a bar mitzvah boy, you have no other choice because it's so small. The contemporary tefillin that are so big, they just don't fit otherwise. You have to rely on this shita.
Can you get smaller tefillin?
Yeah, you can get very small tefillin.
Anything you want.
I'm willing to pay the money. You can get whatever you want. So nevertheless, it's not the whole thing is very, very difficult. The idea that it should have to be dafka on the bottom part of the muscle. Umash amru shetfila shel yad eina me'akeves shel ro. V'nimtza, where are we? V'al tfila shel yad eina me'akeves shel ro. That if you only have one of the two tefillins, you should put on whatever you have. You shouldn't think that you get zero mitzvah if you only put on one. As opposed to, for example, tzitzis. That if you don't have all four tzitzis, you should put on no tzitzis. There's no difference between putting on three or two or one or zero. No difference. V'shel rosh ena mekeves shel yad. Also, if you just have the shel rosh, good. Mipnei shen shtei mitzvos. They're two separate mitzvos. V'al shel rosh mevarech al mitzvah tefillin v'al shayad laniach tefillin. You make the bracha laniach tefillin on the shayad and al mitzvah tefillin on the sharosh. Uvamed varim amurim b'sheiniach echad mehem. That's only if you put on one. Aval miniach shneim yachad mivarech bracha achas bilvad v'laniach tefillin. This is a very big machlokes in the Rishonim, how many brachas you make on the tefillin. So the Sfardi minhag used to follow the Rishonim, the whole lahir, like the Sefer Chinuch was Sfardi, that when you put on both of the tefillin, you make only one bracha. Laniach tefillin, you don't make any bracha on the shel rosh at all. And it's only if you put on only the shel rosh, or if you somehow are mafsik, which you're not supposed to do, have an interruption between the shel yad and the shel rosh, that you make an al mitzvah tefillin, a second bracha, on the putting on of the head tefillin. But that's not the normal course of affairs. Ashkenazim hold that you always make a bracha on the head tefillin. That's the psak of the Rama, following many Rishonim, that you always make a bracha on the head tefillin, al mitzvah tefillin. And if you only put on the head tefillin, you make two brachas, both brachas only on the head tefillin. Okay.
You say Baruch Shem.
So that's why the Ashkenazi minhag nowadays is that after you put on the shetvil and shel rosh, 100%, that you say Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuso Le'olam Vaed, which is what you say after you make a bracha levatola. Oh. So because there are many Rishonim that hold that you don't make a bracha on the shel rosh at all, so just in case we want to ameliorate our making of a bracha on the shel rosh, so therefore we say Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuso Le'olam Vaed. After, again, it doesn't really work. You shouldn't be doing that if it's a real bracha levatola.
Shouldn't be safek brachos lahakel. You shouldn't say
so safek brachos
lahakel. After the Shema.
That's part of the Shema. Yes, that's different. That's a different usage of that phrase. Oh. It has nothing to do with saving yourself from a bracha levatola. When you make a bracha levatola back, then you're supposed to say baruch shem kivod malchus ha'olam v'ed, because it at least ameliorates a little bit that you're adding extra praise to God with the associated with the bracha levatola. So why don't you just say Safek Brachos Lahakel? So you don't say Safek Brachos Lahakel when it contradicts the minhag. If the minhag is stark that you do make a bracha, then you don't say Safek Brachos Lahakel. Although, okay. Yeah. It's an interesting taina. Some people have a compromise that they're not so happy with this idea that we might be making an unnecessary bracha, but nevertheless, the Ashkenazi minhag is very strong that we do make a bracha on the shel rosh. So their compromise is as follows. I read the Samarov, did this other posting of this, that they only make the bracha on the shel yad, the shel rosh, the first time you put it on during the day. But if, for example, you're putting on your tefillin multiple times a day, either because you wear your tefillin for mincha, or you had to go to the bathroom in the middle of shacharis, or who knows what, and you're putting your tefillin back on, so then you don't make the bracha on the shel rosh the second time or the third time that you put on tefillin the day. You only do it the first time, so you shouldn't totally disregard the traditional Ashkenazi practice. The Vilna Gaon says that, though, it's almost explicit in the Tosefta, like the Sfardi practice, that the Tosefta says, when the Tosefta is discussing all the brachas that you make during the day, so it says, manichan mevarech lahaniach tefillin. When you put on the tefillin in the plural, you make the bracha lahaniach tefillin, which sounds like you make the bracha lahaniach on both of them. Okay, but maybe the Talmud Bavli disagrees, so we follow the Talmud Bavli. Okay. First you put on the tefillin shel yad, then you put on the shel rosh. When you take the tefillin off, you take off the head first, and then you take off the shel yad. The idea being, the Gemara darshins that when you're wearing the head tefillin, if at all possible, again, if you have no arms, you only wear head tefillin, but if you, in all things being equal, whenever you're wearing the head tefillin, you should be wearing the shel yad also. That when you're wearing the shel rosh, you should be also wearing the shel yad, which is why you put on the shel yad first and you take off the shel rosh first. Because if you took off the shel yad first, you'd be left just wearing the shel rosh, and really you're supposed to be wearing both anytime that you wear the shel rosh. Umash amru shezman hanachas tefillin bayom misheyirech avero. The earliest time to put on tefillin in the morning is the time of Misha Yakir, which we discussed when we were discussing Krishma, that it's the time where you can see a somewhat no well-known acquaintance and recognize him in the morning. Ad shetishka achama. Shenemar v'shamarta suchaka zos miyamim liyamima. The Torah, the first pasuk that discusses tefillin says, you shall keep this statute at its proper time from days to days. So what does it mean from days to days? First of all, is that talking about the Korban Pesach, which is another thing that Parsha was talking about, or is it talking about tefillin? So there's a huge machlokas in the Gemara as to whether the tefillin are limited to daytime on a deoraisa level or only a derabbanan level. So according to the way the Sefer Chinuch is presenting it, which follows the Rambam, that on a deoraisa level, you only wear tefillin during the day and not at night. However, that's actually not the majority shita. The majority shita is that, technically speaking, on a deraisa level, you can wear tefillin at night also. We're just lemaisa, we do not allow you to put on tefillin at night because you shouldn't fall asleep with them. V'chukah zo, he mitzvahs tefillin. So according to that's his interpretation. V'shabbos v'yontif. On Shabbos night, if you don't wear tefillin, v'hu adin lechulo shel moed. Controversy alert. He says, you don't wear tefillin on Shabbos or Yontif for chol moed. Eino zman alachas tefillin. Shenemar aleihem v'hayu leos. They shall be a sign. V'Shabbos v'yamim tovim ein atzman os vein tzrichin los acher. So it says, what does it say by Shabbos? Osi beinio veinechem, that it's a sign between us and God. So therefore, we don't need two signs in one day. Shabbos is enough of a sign. So don't put on tefillin on Shabbos and Yontif. So what about Chol HaMoed? So we certainly don't have time remaining in the shir today to do justice to the issue of tefillin and Chol HaMoed. But the issue seems to be over here on its very basic level. Is the question is, what is the os that does not allow us to wear tefillin? Is it just the general holiness of the day, or is it the prohibition from performing malacha? We're not allowed to do work. So in the introduction to this edition of the Chinuch, it notes that probably the Sefer Chinuch was a student of the Rashba, and the Rashba paskins that work on Chol HaMoed is an iser d'oraisa. Which is why you don't wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed, according to that shita, it's because of the issue of work. However, according to us, that we really paskin that malach on Chol HaMoed is the Rabbanan, so then you should wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed, which is how the Ramah paskins in Shulchan Aruch, following probably a majority of Rishonim, who seem to hold that you do wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed against the Sefer HaChinuch. However, even if you hold that malach on Chol HaMoed is the Rabbanan, if you hold that is just the general holiness of the day, so, for example, on Chol HaMoed Pesach, you're not allowed to eat chametz. And on Chol HaMoed Sukkot, you're required to eat in the sukkah. Mm-hmm.
If you eat.
What?
If you eat.
Right. So you have special halachas that apply to those days. So if that's the case, that's the way some geonim write. That's why you don't put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed. But it's just interesting here that the Sefer HaChinuch's opinion really does stack up with that of the Rashba, who writes in a tshuva that you do not put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed, which is against, again, the idea that the prohibition of malacha on Chol HaMoed is only the Rabbanan, and then you would put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed, which is obviously a very huge machlokes, yes, among the Rishonim and the Poskim, whether you put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed. But it does seem that the Rashba side, that seems to be a minority yeshita reflecting a minority practice, that it does seem to be that in the times of the Rishonim, that the majority practice, both among Svardim and among Ashkenazim, was in fact that you do put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed.
The Gros says not.
Yeah, that's a big issue.
What?
That's a big issue.
That's a big issue.
The Vilna Gaon says. Oh. That's why in Eretz Yisrael nobody puts on tefillin.
Yep, it's not so push it.
When I first went to Israel, I put on tefillin, and everyone's staring at me like,
they should know already that people like this.
But Lamaisa, when you're in Eretz Yisrael, you shouldn't put on tefillin publicly. It's too weird. But you should put on privately in your hotel or whatever.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
I'm there, go to shul, and everyone's looking at me like,
mm-hmm. Wow. So it's only not so many people are left who are so tmimistic about putting on tefillin chalamoid. They don't even realize that there's such a thing as not putting on tefillin chalamoid. Oh, I love it. Yeah.